Thursday, July 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump prepares to address his party's convention later tonight. Three Hong Kong student protest leaders are convicted for their actions in the massive pro-democracy demonstrations 2 years ago. We'll speak to one of them.
It didn't surprise me about me being convicted because I've talked with the lawyers and they also feel like there's a high chance of me being convicted.
And country singer Miranda Lambert releases a new song following her divorce from fellow star Blake Shelton. It's all ahead. We go now to Cleveland, the site of the Republican National Convention, which concludes later tonight. I'm joined by International Edition's Doug Bernard, who is in the Ohio City. Well, Doug, former Republican presidential candidate Ted Cruz was booed last night when he spoke to the convention, and he seems so far to refuse to endorse nominee Donald Trump. He has since spoken about Trump's attacks against his wife and father.
Right.
You know, is the party unity kind of fraying at this point?
Well, you know, it was interesting. Apparently, Senator Cruz a few weeks ago told Donald Trump when they were meeting face-to-face in Washington that he did not plan to endorse Mr. Trump. He apparently told Mr. Trump again to his face about a week ago or so that he did not intend to endorse Mr. Trump. And yet, Donald Trump kept Ted Cruz on, you know, like the Wednesday night. This was a prime speaking time. And in fact, they lengthened the time. So maybe there was a little kind of hedging of bets. Might he not. So Mr. Cruz got up, he gave a very a sort of impassioned speech, really reaching to the, you know, hard conservative base of the party. It was always going well, up until the point that he used a phrase that's been called a dog whistle, which is he urged people to vote their conscience. Now, that has been the phrase all along of the Never Trump people. And at that point, the crowd that had been generally with him, applauding the senator, really turned. I mean, it wasn't just the New York delegation. The crowd really turned on Ted Cruz. You could almost see in his eyes, like, uh-oh, I've lost them, and he kind of beat a hasty retreat. Also, as that was going on, Donald Trump being Donald Trump, as Senator Cruz was finishing his speech, Donald Trump sort of made an appearance, as it were, in the family box. And so all of a sudden, all the cameras swung around to Donald Trump. Everybody started cheering and chanting his name as Ted Cruz, you know, kind of hustled himself off the stage. What's unfortunate, I think, for the campaign is that this controversy has overshadowed what was supposed to be the key address last night, which was the acceptance speech of the vice presidential nominee, Governor Mike Pence. And nobody is talking about Governor Pence today. It was a somewhat low-key address. He's somewhat a low-key guy. But all of this has really, I think, distracted. Yet again, this is another example of, you know, a convention that just can't quite seem to get it together. There seem to be all these distractions.
Well, meanwhile, tonight is Trump's big night. He will be accepting the Republican nomination for president. You know, is he expected to promote his vision for the country, or will he use the address to attack the likely presumed Democratic nominee, Hillary Clinton?
Well, that has been really the theme of this convention. I mean, you know, we were speaking a little bit earlier ago. I mean, to the degree that people are unifying or uniting, I guess, behind Donald Trump, really what they're doing even more is uniting against Hillary Clinton. There's been an enormous amount of very strong language. I mean, I remember, you know, you may remember Texas Governor Ann Richards talking about President George H.W. Bush. You know, he was poor George. You know, he was born with a silver foot in his mouth. And that's the kind of, you know, sort of good-natured ribbing and whatnot that you see at conventions. But, you know, here we actually had delegates calling for Hillary Clinton literally to be shot. So, I mean, the vitriol on display has been really breathtaking. We're expecting tonight that Donald Trump is going to try to shy away from that. He's going to make the case for him, why he's better, what he will do. He does have prepared remarks. We expect to see an advanced copy of those in a few hours. But then again, you know, Donald Trump has a way of going off script, so you never know what he's really going to say until he says it.
And finally, Doug, is Trump expected to hit the campaign trail immediately? Because next week it will be the Democrats' turn for their convention.
Yes, you know, in fact, it is. It's really always been kind of a rule of courtesy that while one party is having its convention, the other party sort of lays back and, you know, lets them have their moment in the sun. Well, Hillary Clinton already violated that. She was speaking on Monday in Ohio at another convention meeting of, I think it was a Baptist group, but she was, you know, going out and attacking Donald Trump. So at this point, what we're hearing is that there's going to be no time wasted. The Trump campaign is going to immediately head out on the hustings during the Democratic convention. So that's going to, I think, create potentially some interesting interplay.
Interesting indeed. Thanks a lot. That's Doug Bernard reporting from Cleveland, Ohio. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky with a look at what's trending. So with everything going on, Andrew, what's happening?
Oh, there's a lot to talk about. Well, it's not been a great 12 to 24 hours for Donald Trump after that Ted Cruz speech last night at the convention. And further adding to that on Twitter today, the phrase "I choose Ted" is trending because Jonah Goldberg, who is a conservative commentator with the National Review, he wrote an article where he said, well, if I have to choose between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, I choose Ted. So that's kind of galvanizing a lot of Ted Cruz supporters who were kind of downtrodden, I guess, because he didn't get the nomination, and now they're galvanized again after last night's speech. So that's not good for Donald Trump. Then you have hashtag Trump yourself, which is something that the Hillary Clinton campaign has started, allowing people to upload a photo of themselves, and it overlays a quote from Donald Trump, usually something negative about the person who's in the picture, as a way to show some of the words that he's used, the negative words, the hurtful words that he's used. And of course, for Hillary Clinton to raise money, because they have a big thing that says donate on their website when you do this. So that's not a great thing for Donald Trump either, as that's trending, hashtag Trump yourself. So he's, I think, trying to counter that. He has hashtag get your Trump gear. Now, this is actually a paid hashtag. It's at the top of the trending terms on Twitter. So he's paid to have this hashtag show up, and to try to get people to go to his shop and buy hats and T-shirts and things. Well, that's kind of backfired on Twitter because people are saying, well, look, it's all foreign made and it's all kind of too expensive. So people are calling him out on that. But all this is leading up to tonight when he goes to the stage and speaks. So there are a lot of Trump supporters saying this is just where we want to be. Everybody's attacking Donald Trump. He's going to go in there tonight and blow everybody away, and we're going to be in good position after this convention ends. So we'll see how it shapes up tonight, but a lot of anticipation on social media.
Yeah, there certainly is. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. Syrian fighters give the Islamic State a 48-hour deadline to leave Syria's Manbij. China's communists fear new capitalists may fund the wrong causes. A court rules that Russia's track and field athletes cannot compete in the Rio Olympics. And France launches a probe into security measures in Nice. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Researchers have determined an asteroid that smashed into the moon some 3.8 billion years ago to form the Imbrium Impact Basin was more than 241 kilometers across, which is much, much larger than thought. Previous estimates, based strictly on computer models, show the asteroid was only about 80 kilometers in diameter. Writing in the journal Nature, scientists from Rhode Island's Brown University suggest that the asteroid that formed the Imbrium Basin was so enormous that it could have been classified as a protoplanet, which is an object that later can become a planet. The scientists say their findings also suggest that the early solar system was filled with protoplanet-sized asteroids. The researchers made their findings after conducting experiments at NASA's Vertical Gun Range at the Ames Research Center in Mountain View, California. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, three Hong Kong protest leaders are convicted of their actions in protests in 2014. Turkey will suspend the European Convention on Human Rights during the state of emergency it declared following last week's failed coup. I spoke with VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez, who's in Istanbul, and asked him why officials were taking this step.
The aim of President Erdogan is to purge his government, all of its institutions, of any element that might have taken part in this coup attempt. And so he, the same purpose that he had in declaring a state of emergency is the purpose that, of this action to suspend the European Convention. What it does is that it essentially lifts any restriction that prevents him from continuing to carry out that purge. We're talking about restrictions on freedom of movement, freedom of expression, freedom of assembly. And so this essentially allows him, his forces, to go in and carry through the crackdown.
And what has been the reaction to this?
On the streets in Istanbul, of course, if you talk to his supporters, they say that they fully accept the state of emergency, that it's a small price to pay for security. There have been celebrations and demonstrations every night since the coup attempt. And it is those people who are on the streets being called up to the streets by Mr. Erdogan, who has said, we will not leave the town squares. And that is the reason he gives for that is that he says that another coup might be possible if people don't get out and continue showing their support for his government. And so his supporters are very much with that program, with the plan of having a state of emergency. If you talk to members of Turkey's minorities, well, their representatives are very worried about this situation because, well, this is a country that has a long history of persecution, of massacres of people of religious minorities. And so there is a great deal of concern that some of this crackdown may extend beyond those who were involved in the coup attempt and eventually begin to target them.
When will Turkish lawmakers vote on President Erdogan's call for a state of emergency?
They have been meeting all day, and so these meetings are marathon. There's no time frame as to when an official decision will come down, but the state of emergency itself has been approved by the parliament. Its individual measures and the individual bills that are being passed that are being debated at this moment. One of the most controversial of those moves, it's not a bill yet, it's simply a proposal, and an informal proposal, if you would, by Mr. Erdogan, for the death penalty to be reinstated in Turkey. He has said, and he said so just before announcing the declaration of the state of emergency, that he will most definitely approve it if the parliament does.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Luis, for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Sarah.
That's correspondent Luis Ramirez reporting from Istanbul, Turkey. Three Hong Kong student leaders have been convicted of participating in a protest that led to a massive pro-democracy demonstration nearly 2 years ago. Joshua Wong, Alex Chow, and Nathan Law were found guilty of their actions in the protest. The three scaled the fence of the Hong Kong government complex on September 26, 2014, and staged a protest on a courtyard known as Civic Square to demand full and free elections for the semi-autonomous Chinese territory. I spoke with Nathan Law following his conviction.
Well, I'm convicted of the inciting unauthorized assemblies targeted on the event happening on 26 September in 2014, which was the night of we having an action called Regaining the Civic Square.
Now, I believe your conviction is slightly different from that of Joshua Wong and Alex Chow.
Yes, Alex and Joshua, their convictions are the same, which is participating in an unauthorized assembly. But for me, my conviction is inciting the unauthorized assemblies, which are slightly different, yeah.
And what is your reaction to this conviction?
Well, to be very honest, every possible outcomes I have repeated to them in my mind for over 100 times. So I was basically facing the whole result with a normal mind and with calm. So it didn't surprise me about me being convicted because I've talked with the lawyers and they also felt like there's a high chance of me being convicted just before the results was announced.
Now, I believe that you will be sentenced on August 15th. Do you plan to appeal this?
Well, to appeal or not, I still have to seek legal opinion. And but for me, it is very likely to be sentenced with imprisonment. So I believe that if that was the case, there's high possibility that I will appeal.
Did you think conditions have declined in the last 2 years in Hong Kong, or do you think they're about the same?
Well, obviously, the conditions of freedom and human rights in Hong Kong have been decaying and declining, and definitely it triggered a lot more other more radical actions coming out in Hong Kong, and it is not a very healthy situation. And also, the government tends to solve these kind of political problems by legal procedures. For example, this is an example of it, which they use legal procedure to deal with a political issue or a political event. And it doesn't work. It doesn't solve any intrinsic contradictions of the whole society and the bipolarization and intense situation between the people in civic society and the government haven't been solved. So I believe that the Hong Kong government, they should really consider to adjust their tactics. Instead of just suing all the people that they don't like, they should build bridges between them and try to find a way out and to ensure that everyone in Hong Kong, they enjoy their freedom and human rights.
Nathan Law, one of the three Hong Kong student leaders who were convicted of taking part in the pro-democracy protests 2 years ago. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. July 20th marked the first anniversary of country music power couples Blake Shelton and Miranda Lambert's divorce. During that time, Blake Shelton has been vocal in the press and in his new music about his new romance with Gwen Stefani and the end of his marriage. Miranda Lambert, on the other hand, has remained relatively quiet until now. Her new song, Vice, was just released, and Nikki Strong of VOA Music is here to tell us all about it. So, Nikki, now that Miranda has spoken through her music, what's she saying?
Great question, especially since she did drop her song the week of the anniversary of her divorce. So that's symbolic right there. Everyone has been waiting to hear her side of the story, so we were expecting some response that would talk directly about Blake or to Blake. But she doesn't really go there. She doesn't go and get Blake, she actually goes inside herself.
Oh.
Yes. So the song is self-reflective. It paints, it's like a paintbrush that draws a picture of a woman's regretful decisions and self-destructive behaviors. Vices, basically. A series of vices, per se, that someone would engage in after a heartbreak, you know, or after a divorce. So some of the lyrics say, another vice, another call, another bed I shouldn't crawl out of. At 7 a.m. with shoes in my hand, said I wouldn't do it, but I did it again. And I know I'll be back tomorrow night. So it's a little heavy. It's great, though. But she doesn't make any direct ties to Blake Shelton, per se. If anything, she creates a picture of someone dealing with depression and heartache.
Well, that interpretation would align with her post on Instagram, too.
Yeah, she dropped the song first and then posted a message on Instagram, the actual one-year anniversary date. And this is what it says. It says, "The last year of my life has been one of heartache and healing, of learning to be honest, accepting the flaws and celebrating the smiles, finding peace in dark places, having some moments alone with me, facing fears and feelings, all of them. I got to know my guitars, became friends with a pencil and paper, used melodies to lead me places I had never been, made music with my friends, because music is medicine. Thank you for joining me on this journey."
So how are the fans responding to all of this?
Well, the majority of us are very supportive. We're like, yes, Miranda. We're excited about new music, and we're excited that she's putting stuff out there. Of course, some, you know, like the tabloids, they want the pettiness that comes with going tit for tat, especially since the first, you know, couple of singles that Blake Shelton's album has dropped has been directed towards Miranda and don't necessarily put her in the best light. But what I find to be interesting is with both of them is that Blake Shelton's first single, Came Here to Forget, and hers are very similar because they both speak about people trying to cope with heartache through vices. So in Blake's first single, he talks about going to a bar to drown out his sorrows and perhaps sleeping with the person that, you know, he's talking to forget his heartache. And drinking and sleeping around are two of the things that she talks about doing in Vice. So and Blake's album cover is called If I'm Honest. And I think she is being honest as well. I think first and foremost with herself. And the fact that she decided to release a song that is literally not about Blake, I think speaks to her moving on and growing from her experience and using music to move through it. So I can't wait to hear the new album. No word yet as to a release date. We just have Vice.
Okay, we just have to wait for that. You can hear Miranda Lambert's Vice and more music from country artists like Blake Shelton on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on social media at VOA Music on Facebook and VOA_music on Twitter. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
My pleasure. Another vibe.
Singer Miranda Lambert with her new song, Vice. And that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Prominent independent social researcher and political commentator Khaim Lai was shot and killed in Phnom Penh on Sunday, July 10th. "Let me share my condolences for the dead. I condemn this brutal act," Prime Minister Hun Sen said in a Facebook post later that day. He also called on authorities to take strong action in the case and try to control and strengthen security in order to protect the safety of people across the country. In a Facebook post, Sam Rangsi, the president of the opposition Cambodian National Rescue Party, strongly condemned the killing. "Mr. Khaim Lai was a dignified son of Cambodia who actively participated in the fight for democracy and justice for the Khmer people," he wrote. "I never thought that I was going to live long," Mr. Lai reportedly said. "One day I might die or be shot to death, but as long as I live, I will say what others dare not to. No one can buy me or make me not speak out." "We are deeply saddened and concerned by reports of the tragic killing of prominent Cambodian political commentator Dr. Khaim Lai," said John Kirby, Assistant Secretary and State Department spokesperson, in a statement. "We offer our sincere and profound condolences to his family, friends, and colleagues. The United States," he said, "is following developments in this case closely, noting the Cambodian government's call for an investigation, and urged that authorities ensure this process be thorough and impartial."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.